Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's who you have the next 3 hours. Good evening. Happy Friday. Happy weekend. Welcome in Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szepkowski, Anthony Herron with you tonight. A Bears preseason game. The good news, no major injuries just yet. Even better news, we're 40% done with the NFL preseason in terms of the Chicago Bears. The Cubs win a wild one, but an entertaining and fun one at Wrigley Field today against the Washington Nationals. The Nationals are in town, so automatically there are endless storylines to go along with that this evening and into this weekend as well. So we'll spend some time discussing that tonight. Also, college football right around the corner, and Big Ten wise, some big happening scandals off the field, and it's not just Ohio State. We'll touch on all of that and plenty more before 10 o'clock tonight. What's going on, Big Van?
Beyonce's in my hood. Beyonce's nearby.
And you're hanging out with me.
Yeah. Chose to come and kick it with you for a few hours instead. Now, Beyonce might still be there. I don't know exactly what time the concert starts with her and Jay, but they're over at Soldier Field. So it was a bit of gridlock trying to get out of the South Loop, getting up here tonight. It feels like she's kind of turning into, you know, Billy Joel is at Wrigley Field like every year now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like Beyonce, at least in the time I've been living there near Soldier Field, Beyonce is there almost every year now. That's kind of becoming her annual, I guess, rite of passage into the fall, that we're going to see Beyonce in the summer.
Yeah, and if you can sell 60,000 tickets, why not do that instead of selling out the UC? You probably will walk around with quite the better payday, if
makes
that's the case.
Me.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's Nick Szepkowski, Anthony Herron on an hour brought to you by Continental Motors. Searching for a Honda CRV, search ContinentalHonda.com for the Continental difference. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number to call. I want to talk some Cubs and Nationals here before too long, but I do want to ask you a couple things in regards to the Bears game last night. And I've never been one of, oh my goodness, takeaways from the first preseason game or second preseason game. But I do have an honest question. And I think that you're someone that can at least lead me in the right direction of finding an answer here. What does two series for a starting quarterback accomplish? Four pass attempts? Because I like to think, all right, new offense. Yes, it makes all the sense for them to be out there and clicking and figuring things out. But does like 10, 12 plays together really do a whole hell of a lot simply because it's against another team? Like, what is the mission, I guess, of sending a quarterback in a starting line, or not even a whole starting lineup, but majority of a starting lineup out there for all of 10 or 12 plays, whatever it was in two series?
I would actually say, and then, you know, there's not a uniform line of thought on this. I hear some guys disagreeing with my point of view, but I know I'm not alone in the thought that it's even more important now to get a few snaps here and there. I even thought he should have played a few snaps in the Hall of Fame game. At least get him three reps where he, even if it's just going to be hand the ball off to Ryan Nall three times and then go take a seat. I think it's important more so for Trubisky maybe than anyone else on the offense. Like Kyle Long, for them, he didn't even play all eight plays. I think Kyle just played like the first four snaps or whatever it was for that first series. Then they sat him down. I think because Trubisky, and we got to think about the whole sort of scope of his development and think back to he only had whatever it was the 13 starts in college and hadn't been under center and hadn't broken the huddle. And some of those things that were part of why his progression last season was fairly gradual. And so we fast forward that to this year, where he's not just a complete blank slate. You know, he knows the footwork that's required in being under center and taking the pull from center and doing handoffs. And he's been in a huddle before, but he hasn't been in a huddle nearly as much when you compare him to a guy like a Josh Rosen, who's been in the pro-style offense coming in as a rookie this year. So I do think it's important, even if it's only a few snaps, even just those eight plays, for him to start to get the rhythm, the timing of this offense down, because it's all new to him, it's all new to everybody else. And for him as such an inexperienced quarterback at any major competitive level, college and professional, it's important for him to be out on the field a few times to have as good a shot as possible of when you actually get to the opening game of the season for him to look like he knows what he's doing.
Well, in that case, then why not play a full quarter? Why not play into the second quarter? Why not have more? I get it in terms of you don't want your star to go down injured. Not even that Mitch Trubisky's a star, because he's not a star. He's
but
a guy in a second. But
it's
he
your franchise
is
QB right
he's
now.
Your franchise QB, and if he's not your franchise QB, then Ryan Pace is going to be fired in a matter of a couple seasons if that doesn't turn out to be the case. So I guess it's just, to me, it's so much more valuable right now for a team that I look at it, and my expectation is, I mean, sitting around and everyone, friend-wise, anyone that you talk to, neighbor-wise, anything, they start getting excited about the Bears this time of year, all the time. Oh, how's it going to be? New coach, new direction. And my thought is always, man, it's not just a second-year quarterback playing his first year in a new system. It's not just a new head coach. It's Allen Robinson playing an entirely new system versus what he's used to. And I know he has had stardom-type numbers in Jacksonville, but his offenses didn't look anything like this offense is going to look.
Right.
Jordan Howard has been a hell of a running back for a fifth-round pick, but him fitting into this offense, there's going to be growing pains with that. I think that is safe to say in terms of he's a guy that has to get carry after carry to kind of get going. He's been on the record of saying that type of thing, and it doesn't seem like it's an offense that really lends itself to being that way to give him what he needs to succeed, and that's not even taking into account his struggles in the passing game. So my answer and my thought going into this year is always kind of, well, I think by November, mid-November, it might be pretty fun to watch this team. Unfortunately, you're going to have to go through September and October where this offense, I think there are going to be some real growing pains.
Have to survive September, and survive October.
Yeah, it's going to be against second strings and whatnot, but this is a rare time where I wouldn't be opposed to seeing more of your starters, more of your key guys playing a little bit longer into preseason games, because I do think there is something to be gained.
And the game's changed a little bit. At least the philosophy of this has changed a little bit. Like for me, my rookie year in Detroit was 2001, where Marty Morningweg, I was a part of that Marty experiment with him and Matt Millen when they came to Detroit and took things over. And that year, there was Charlie Batch was basically battling to keep the starting job versus Ty Detmer. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was Charlie initially was the starter to kind of open the season, and then there was some vacillating back and forth between the two of them. But as far as the preseason went that first year, some similarities here because Marty was a first-year head coach, so there were some additional mandatory mini camps that could be had. And I'm trying to remember. I think we might have – did we play the Hall of Fame game that year in 2001? I can look it up and figure it out. But we actually played –
it's like the only national game the Lions ever got on TV while you were there,
Thanksgiving.
Probably. Yeah,
that
I was going to say.
Thanksgiving, you can count on Detroit. Other than that, there wasn't a whole lot of national television happening. But he did. He played the starters deeper into the preseason games. It's you guys' first year in my system, my first year working with you. I've never been a head coach before. And that wasn't so uncommon back then where it was, I think, the opening preseason game. It was the starters got, you know, half the first quarter, and then the second game the starters got into the second quarter, and then the third game it was, all right, come out of halftime and get a series or two in the third quarter. And that wasn't so uncommon back then. Now, because of all the dollars that are in it and because of the level of risk that's involved in it, you do see people throttling back on how many reps the starters get. And there's a difficult balance with that because you get so many fewer reps over the off season and in training camp nowadays than what you did back when I played in the early 2000s, or even, you know, you look at the first part of this decade, you know, it's just this last collective bargaining agreement where you see far less time on the field available to coaches to spend with the players. So it wouldn't bother me, and I think there's a way to control it. Like I said, I went on the record. I said I thought he should have been out there in the first game for a few plays, and then here in the second game maybe get a couple of additional series. I understand why it's difficult to take that level of risk, and especially when you factor in there's five preseason games available. But to me, take advantage of that first game, and then the second game, maybe he gets three series instead of two, and all that depends on just how things go. But I'll be surprised if he doesn't at least get the full first quarter in this next game, just depending on how things go, because, you know, those eight snaps he had didn't look great last night. So you do want to get
something out of this
preseason.
Which one was your favorite? Which two completions for 4 yards was your favorite last night?
The very first one was my – well, either the first one – both Kevin White plays were my favorites, and Kevin White – was responsible for not catching either one of them. That's kind of a separate topic of whether or not Kevin White's going to make this team. But I like the fact that they took a shot play on first down, the very first snap of the preseason for Mitch Trubisky. He saw the coverage he wanted. It was single high. Kevin White, former top 10 pick, you're matched up one-on-one. To Kevin's credit, he had a clean release. It was kind of a stutter go. It wasn't a full, just straight on, you know, just try to run by the guy with blazing speed. Gave him a little stutter after he had his release. There was a slight bit of separation. There wasn't the level of separation you're looking for, and it wasn't a perfect pass, so he wasn't able to drop it in there. But I like the fact that they called a shot play on first down. So out of the 8 snaps that Trubisky was in there, that one was maybe my favorite. You know, either that or the one that Kevin White dropped later in that same series, because it was a good ball. It was in rhythm, and he threw it, you know, precisely where you want to throw, just above the eye mask, because there's not defensive backs in the area. So that's kind of the cleanest area receivers are going to catch a ball, where they're coming back downhill towards it. So Mitchell Trubisky on that play did exactly what he wanted to do, just didn't finish in what should have been a very easy reception for White.
Yeah, and I thought the Kevin White quotes, just reading the newspaper this morning after the game, were kind of a guy that sounds like he's in his own head a little bit of, oh, the easiest plays are the hardest one to make sometimes. It's like, no, then I get what you're trying to say and think like, yeah, maybe he was overthinking it or what. But no.
You know, the whole blowing the layup type of thing.
The easiest plays are the easiest plays to make. Like, that's kind of the
for
way
the
that
good
that
good players,
goes.
That's how it usually goes. Yeah.
Yeah, they make the hard look routine, and they make routine look, I mean, completely thoughtless, pretty much, is kind of how the great ones do it. And, I mean, no, it's not the routine ones that are that hard to make. Like, the routine ones are still routine to make. You have to make them, especially if you're a former first-round pick that's played all of, what, 4 games ever in a Bears uniform in the regular season? 312-644-6767. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com on a segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. Tons to come tonight. Going to stay on some of this Bears conversation. You want in on it. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. Text messages 67011. Some college football talk at 8 o'clock with our guy Pete Futek. Going to break down the Big Ten a little bit and some of the weird happenings there off the field that have been going on. So we'll get into some college football talk there, 8 o'clock. Obviously, Cubs and Nationals in town this weekend for the first of 3 today. Goes the way of the Cubs. And
Bryce
there was
Harper's in town.
Bryce Harper's in town. The drama that comes with that. And Anthony Rizzo did something that I think belongs on not most disrespectful, but most exhausting things an opponent can do to someone. And just most leave you with your head, I don't know, your head in your hands and frustrated as an opponent. We'll get into all of that. Plenty more to come. 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you on a Friday night. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is a Dr. Feelgood Friday night here. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you tonight. Up until 10 o'clock this evening, spending some time with some Bears conversation. And I don't know if there was anything from the first team offense last night that had you being Dr. Feelgood, but we discuss it nonetheless at 312-644-6767. You brought up the name of Kevin White last night.
And I do have a positive spin on that when you
okay.
Make your
because I was simply just going to ask, it seems like when you would, and I know that it's a cautionary way to go about seeing a practice, but when you'd see on Twitter, there'd be plenty of Bears fans, despite the Bears requests that media types don't dare put out there on Twitter of what's going on and analyzing anything in practice, there'd be plenty of fans that would put videos out there for you to see. Gridiron Assassin, I know, a regular texter and caller to this radio station, had videos up on his feed the whole time, a couple other ones as well. And you'd see a lot of Kevin White highlights. And usually what I would notice is, like, who's the bum that is in coverage against one Kevin White?
Who is dude?
Who is? That's not a 23 on Kyle Fuller. That's not Prince Amukamara. That's some guy I have no idea who he is and what he's going to be doing in 3 weeks when his football career is probably over at the NFL level. Like, it's nice to make catches and make plays, but kind of beating up on bums. And I, what is a fair... Like, what are you looking for? If he is that close to being on the border of making the 53-man roster versus not, pros, cons, for his case so far? And what are you looking for to be different besides simply availability? Mm-hmm. Because that's been his number one problem since the day he stepped foot in this league.
Right.
Beyond just availability, what are you looking for with him to say that's a guy that deserves a spot?
The expectations are, with good reason, so much lower. When I look at Kevin White at this point, just evaluate what I think he could potentially be for the Bears this year, to me it's about wondering, can he even play at this level at this point? Can he be a quality NFL wide receiver? And, you know, part of the reason that question is unanswered is because of the amount of time that he's missed. But also, and I went into this last year before he got injured, through the preseason and the initial games of the year when he was on the field, he didn't look sharp, didn't look explosive, didn't look sudden, didn't look confident. And for a guy who had been, even though he had been injured in the initial seasons of his career, he's been around the game. He's been around the National Football League. He's at least been on the practice field at previous points. There are some things you pick up just from being around the game and just getting used to, becoming accustomed to being a professional athlete, being in the NFL. It didn't seem like there'd been a lot of positive gains even in last preseason. So to me at this point, it's not as much about can Kevin White look like a top 10 pick. There's a wide swath of available territory from him looking like a top 10 pick to just looking like a guy who deserves to be in the NFL, who's worthy of making the Bears roster this year, because the receiver position is, of course, much deeper in Chicago with what they did in transactions over the offseason this year. So to me, when I look at last night's game and the positive I'll take from it as it relates to Kevin White, and maybe this isn't going to be glasses half full for Kevin White, but one of the things that disturbed me last year was the fact that I didn't even think they targeted Kevin White that much, because especially for John Fox, where he's a part of the staff that was trying to get him on the field and that brought him to Chicago. And to me, where you should be putting Kevin White in a prove it mode. And at least in last night's game, he got targeted 3 different times in those 8 plays that Mitchell Trubisky was out there and that Kevin White was on the field with him. That to me is a positive, because you're at least putting him in a position to have a shot at making a play, to show whether or not he can be successful at this level. So by the end of it, and we've seen it, you mentioned the highlights of the fans and the stands on, you know, in the bleachers during practices and what Kevin White's done out there. And it hasn't all been that. You know, I think people are excited that he's been healthy and that he's been on the practice field and he's made a few plays. From what I've seen, it certainly hasn't been all that. Kevin White isn't this dominant force. When I've been in Bermanet, he's not this dominant force just lighting up the practice field. But for last night's game, to be targeted on the very first snap on a deep ball, to have a drop later in that drive, and then on like a third and 23 or something like that, where the pass rush started to get home and Trubisky held the ball a little bit and he started to escape the pocket and he kind of threw it in White's general direction again. They're at least looking for him. They're starting to target Kevin White. Last night's game was a bad game for him. That goes without saying. There's no doubt he didn't play well, but hopefully this week's game, he'll get more targets. The following week's game, he will get more targets. And at least by the time this is over, because to me, the organization, with the amount of resources they put into rehabbing Kevin White, paying Kevin White vast sums of money, what you don't want to have him do is to leave Chicago and, on one end, when you're looking at it from Kevin White's lens, to question himself of whether or not he can play at this level, or if he was even given the opportunity to prove it. But you don't want, if you're the Bears, for him to leave here and you feel like you don't know for sure what you think of Kevin White. You want to make sure he's getting work in this preseason and have an opportunity to make plays, because if you don't, then there's just a big question mark as to whether or not it's worth keeping him around much longer. And if you do, whether or not you can get something from him. You want to make sure he's getting every opportunity imaginable to prove if he can make plays at this level, at least be competitive at this level. Because if he can, then you got a number 3 or number 4 receiver, and see what perhaps he grows into if he stays healthy and actually gets reps.
That's Anthony Heron. I'm Nick Szepkowski. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call if you'd like to spend some time talking some Bears this evening. I will say, and this is a very low bar to clear, but it is worth mentioning and noticing, I suppose, that first play offensively, just the idea of going deep.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a fair observation, Bears fan wise.
If you're
used to watching this team the last 3 years, where, I mean, anything more than like 12 yards downfield, you're like, oh my God, it's a deep ball.
Yeah.
It's like a very intermediate ball, but it feels like it's deep. Like, ever since Marshall and Alshon have been gone, you simply don't see that with this team. And it was like a, hey, keep your eyes on the prize here this year. There might be something interesting worth watching.
That was a true shot play. When you hear the term shot play, you normally don't associate it with the Bears passing game.
Don't know if the execution's going to be worth a damn now. Right. Don't know if it's going to be worth a damn in week 15 this year. What I do know, it's going to be at least more fun to watch along the way than to see little check downs and throws into the flat that you saw all of the last three seasons.
Throwing it to some tight end with three guys hanging on his back to see if he can make this Herculean effort. No, there's going to be legitimate opportunities in Matt Nagy's offense for the quarterback Trubisky to make plays and for these wide receivers that they brought in to show what they've been in the past and if that can be exceptional within this Chicago scheme. I think there's good potential for it. It's all going to come back to whether or not Trubisky can handle the volume of everything that's required of him, because it is a very quarterback-heavy, quarterback-rich, from a mental standpoint sort of system. But if he can handle those gymnastics, there's going to be playmaking opportunities there.
Bottom of the hour on the score, brought to you by Lakeside Bank. For the second year in a row, the top-rated bank in Chicago is Lakeside Bank. S&P Global Intel says Lakeside is number one again among all 2017 banks between $1 and $10 billion in assets. Join Lakeside Bank. It's about time. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number to call as we continue to talk some Bears this evening. After their second preseason game a night ago in Cincinnati, where they fall, again, wins and losses, no one's saying they're important in the preseason. They fall, though, 30-27 last night in Cincinnati. And one of the other takeaways I'm seeing a lot of excitement from last night, and I guess it was good to see because the guy did ultimately make a play on a ball. He caught the ball. He returned the intercepted ball for a touchdown in Kyle Fuller. But it wasn't anything special he did on that play. It was simply a receiver falls over his own feet.
Yeah, John Ross stumbles
and
hits
Fuller
turf.
Happened to be there. Right. I mean, if the receiver doesn't trip on his own, it's a catch for 12 yards. So it's hard for me to give like, all right, yep, Kyle Fuller's a playmaker now. It's right place, right time, and he happened to make a catch, something he didn't do a season ago. What's he had? 8 interceptions and 3 full seasons of play?
Yeah, it seemed early in his career like the ball skills were going to be a big positive for him. And then just in the year,
he had like 3 picks in his first 4 games or something.
Yeah, somehow just his hands haven't seemed quite as confident or comfortable in time since then. Even last year, when you think about the season he put together and borderline potential, should he be a Pro Bowler type of guy? And I had to talk Bernstein off of that a little bit. Just, you know, he played well, especially when, from what we've seen of Kyle Fuller, he played really well last year. On that particular play with the interception, again, I'll go the glasses half full route with that.
There you go. That's what you're here for.
Sure. Let's go. Let's use that for right now. From Fuller's standpoint, he did what he needed to do, but specifically Leonard Floyd on that play pressured the quarterback. Now, Leonard Floyd he certainly isn't Kevin White, because he's been on the field. You know, he's been injured through the first 2
years
of his
career. He's
gotten
in November twice.
But he's made some plays. Sure. He's been on the field a good bit. He's made plays. There's a lot of physical attributes that are there. There's potential there. So from getting to see him rush the quarterback a number of times last night, I'm seeing a guy whose hands are getting much more violent than they were early in his career. And that's something that's so vital for an edge rusher, to be able to utilize your hands. And not only when you're making moves that you've been working on in practice, but these are big, strong guys that are blocking you. These offensive tackles have long arms. They clamp their hands on. And when they do, they have them in the proper position, they're likely going to get away with holding you. So you do have to, when you're a pass rusher, you make a lot of maneuvers with your levers. When I'm coaching guys, I use the term levers, where you're clubbing, you're ripping, you're swimming, you're doing all these different maneuvers with your hands. And when you're using the violence of your hands to knock their hands off, it has to be very explosive moves that you're making with your hands and with your arms. He's getting better with that, with actually utilizing real pass rush mechanics and doing it in a more explosive way with his upper body. Not just explosive with his speed or elusiveness, but actually setting up moves with his footwork. And then on the Kyle Fuller interception, he set the offensive tackle up, got him a couple of steps up the field, and then made a counter move, came inside just with a simple club swim. So it's a fairly basic maneuver, but it looks more basic, especially if you've rushed the quarterback before. He hadn't rushed the quarterback a whole lot when he got to the Chicago Bears, so it's nice to see him not just rushing the contact so consistently. And he was able to pressure Andy Dalton in a way where if Andy Dalton wouldn't have been under some duress, perhaps he sees that John Ross is actually on the ground, but he had Leonard Floyd bearing down on him. And that was part of what led to him throwing a ball to a receiver who was laying on his back. And then the easy interception for Kyle Fuller from there. So the positive for that play, even though it was set up very easily for Kyle Fuller, big part of that reason why is because there was some growth shown from Leonard Floyd. Growth and health. You know, one of those things that are going to be a common refrain for a number of Bears players who've been injured in recent years.
Yeah, Kyle Fuller, to go back in time to 2014, had three interceptions in his first three games. Two in week two against Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers. That Sunday night game where they came back and had the big-time win that was supposed to turn around a season. Then they won on the road on Monday Night Football against the Jets. He picked off Geno Smith. Those are three of his interceptions in his career. Ever since then, September 22nd of 2014, after having three interceptions in his first three games, Kyle Fuller has a massive five interceptions in every game since then. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. It's Nick Schupkowski, Anthony Herron with you, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. And spending some time tonight talking about the Bears. Again, I don't make any grand conclusions from a week or 2 weeks of preseason football, but seeing some trends and things. And I thought that an important takeaway last night and kind of started the show with it today is just the unique situation the Bears find themselves in. No one's looking at them as a favorite or really a serious threat to make a run at a playoff spot this year. They're seeing it as mostly a team that is going to have a new offense entirely, even with a quarterback in his second year playing for the same team. It's an entirely different system. And because of that, because of being in an NFC North where you are, say what you want about closing the gap on the Lions talent-wise, I don't think you're going to find any football experts out there that realistically give the Bears anything better than an okay shot at finishing third in their own division.
Mm-hmm.
With all of that, and with a team with so much overhaul this past offseason in the coaching ranks, in the offensive ranks, and even guys coming off of injury. I mean, Kyle Long last year coming off of injury.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of guys. He's not the only one. He was the first name that popped into mind. Mm-hmm. I just look at it this year of how many guys are learning a role on this team and how much different it is. And usually it's like, all right, preseason, any sport, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, it's like, just put the ball in the air on opening day and wake me up then. But with this one, I think that there are, like, there's this thought of, oh my God, it's going to turn into the Eagles, it's going to turn into the Rams, and overnight you're going to have all this success right away. It's like, you remember those two teams because that's the rare case where it happens. Because you don't see a new coach come in and all of a sudden you go from being laughingstock of the league or laughingstock of your division to being threat in your conference or threat to win a Super Bowl right away. Like, there's usually a natural kind of learning curve that comes with all of it. And I expect that to be the case with this team, and I'd like to see that addressed more in this preseason where you're gifted that fifth game. And why have your starting quarterback and some of the regulars out there for only two series? Why not go a third series, get deeper into this a little bit? But I get it. The argument backs, like, you don't want guys getting hurt in games that don't matter. I get it. I understand it. But I think this is a different offseason versus what you're normally used to.
And then especially when you factor in that the final preseason game, fourth for most people, it'll be the fifth for the Bears, that they will likely sit the starters again based off what we saw in the opener. Now, you know, there are some coaches, especially when you go back maybe a decade or so, who even in that final preseason game, let's get the guys a series just to kind of keep them in rhythm and, you know, make sure that the timing is still there. And just so you're in the routine of, we warm up for a game, we dress for a game, we play in a game, and then we shut it down. There is something to be said for the routine of that. There's a lot of coaches who find that to be vital. But when you think of where the Bears are going to be in that final preseason game compared to that first one, if none of the starters played in game one, I don't see a lot of reason to think the starters are going to play in game five. So you're basically working with a three-game window for how much work, how many reps can we get out of these guys to try to have them ready for that season opener. And that's why I feel like game one was a missed opportunity. Now, when you look at last night, you get the starters just a couple of series and they sit down. So I hope these next two games are really going to be where we see some more work, some more reps to be left onto the field, because you don't want to get to that season opener, and especially for Matt Nagy and his staff, to not be certain which things really work, which don't within our system, which players look the most comfortable. I mean, there was a procedural moment even in the first two drives where they had to take a timeout. I think it was either on a second or maybe a third down where there was a motion coming in from the outside and Trubisky was getting ready to take the snap, and then Nagy called a timeout from the sideline just because formationally he didn't look comfortable with where things are at. So you want to get those things out of the way during the preseason. So I'm hoping that, you know, what for the Bears will be game three and game four of the preseason, that you get a lot of work for these starters. And I know people get worried about whether or not people are going to get injured. That concern is just a part of the game. You can't let that level of fear not actually have you prepared for your team to take the field once you actually open the season, because once it's there, you're definitely only going to get so much work in a pseudo live or a tempoed kind of setting once you actually get the regular season going. So you got to take advantage of these preseason opportunities.
That's Anthony Herron. I'm Nick Szepkowski. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Some texters getting on my case. Apparently, on our last rejoin, I misidentified Feel Good Incorporated by Gorillaz and called it Dr. Feel Good. And oh man, the high and mighties are upset about that. Let me just tell you this. Both of those songs are a pile of garbage, and if you find yourself defending either of them tonight, rethink your position on your musical tastes. Not to say that I'm like Beethoven over here and be able to analyze all of your sound for you, but both of those are trash.
That was the most current musical.
It's the first musical mind that popped into my mind.
Yeah, I mean, Beethoven's a good one. That's a big deal musical mind.
He was deaf and he was writing like classical, all-time historical stuff. So if I'm going to cite somebody, I'll cite my man Beethoven and say that, yes, the Gorillaz are trash, and Dr. Feelgood, who was at Motley Crue, wasn't exactly an award-winning band, or at least any award that's worth winning.
I was actually singing Dr. Love on a different outlet yesterday that I was on a show for a few hours, and I don't even know what ended up leading us down that road, but I was singing Dr. Love at one point, and then it got me to telling stories about my happenings with Kiss, with Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley, and nearly getting in fights in the broadcast booth. It was that was how we closed the show for the last few minutes yesterday. But Dr. Love popped into my head when you were talking about Dr. Feelgood there.
There is something in terms of music, in terms of the Bears, that I do have to address. We'll do that coming up here before, though. We'll go to Melrose Park. Vince next up on The Score tonight. What's up, Vince?
How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good, Vince.
So I just wanted to make a comment in regards to the interceptions. I heard earlier today, I think it was this morning, where Prince Mukamara said that his goal this year is to get like 10 interceptions.
Right.
And then you guys were just speaking on how Kyle Fuller has not really, been the greatest cornerback in regards to interceptions. But I think that it's, kind of a fluky play. I feel like it's more fluky than a fumble, than a forced fumble. So I always wonder why we as fans and the analytics focus so much on the interception when I think it's the hardest play to really execute. So I think that, when it comes to cornerback play, I would focus more on tackle ability, coverage ability, more so than the interceptions. I'm just wondering why you guys think we focus on interceptions more so than your ability to cover, your ability to, aggressive at the release point, things like that.
I think that your ability to cover is, if you have a bunch of interceptions, it probably means you're covering fairly well.
In most cases,
I don't think you fall into like the guys that had 8-10 interceptions a year. I don't think you stumble into that many. If you're getting that many picks, you're probably decent at your job.
Yeah, and especially for today's NFL, I mean, for Vince talking about tackling, and that's important. It matters. I mean, there was a touchdown that Joe Mixon had during the game on the first score of the night for the Bengals, where two missed tackles happened from the Bears. I think it was Timu and Amos, I think, both out in the flat somewhere, missed tackles, and Mixon ended up running in for a touchdown. So tackling is important for defensive backs, and it can be important in situations for corners. But especially in today's NFL, the ability to tackle has been devalued because of the volume of passing that's there and the amount of man coverage that so many teams tend to go on the outside in the league today. The ability to cover, and more than anything else, the ability to take the football away. And that's been such a storyline with the Bears defense here over the last couple of years, because they've been so mediocre at getting takeaways. And I tend to use the term, not just turnovers. I mean, they create turnovers, I guess. But to me, I like to use the term takeaways when I'm coaching defensive guys, when I'm just talking about actually getting the football from the opposing offense when you're a defender, because there is a mentality that goes with that. And there are techniques that get executed to get that. And so when you can steal a possession from the other team and get your offense another opportunity to put points on the board, that's part of where you tend to see the teams in the National Football League that rank highest in takeaways and in turnover margin, and not just in the NFL, really in football in general, those tend to be the teams that are doing well, that have records above 500 consistently, that are up at the top of their divisions and in the playoff standing. So overall, I guess I would just say, Vince, your point is not valid. Your point is not correct when you're talking about whether or not tackling should be viewed as more important than interceptions. Interceptions are a huge deal.
Yeah, and I think that this is a stat that kind of backs that up, but I don't even think it goes nearly in-depth enough. Last year, if the Bears didn't force a turnover, they were 0-5 in those games, the five games that they didn't. Two or more turnovers forced, and this sounds like it's the Lovie Smith days, where he called them takeaways. They weren't even turnovers. They were takeaways because you earned them, you went and you took the ball away. Mm-hmm. Two or more turnovers last year the Bears forced, they finished 5-2 in those seven games. So it's like the value of adding a possession. I mean, we sit here, and one of the big things Doug Peterson did last year, and he's not the only coach that's done it. Mike Tomlin has done it. Some other coaches have as well. But this idea of going for it on fourth down, fourth and short, if you're even at your own 40. Hell, he did it in the Super Bowl at the 1 or 2 yard line. He went for it on fourth down just before halftime, risked all of that, came up with, I mean, the gutsiest, the ballsiest call of the NFL season that helped win them the Super Bowl.
Really,
but this
special
idea of adding possessions and adding more points when you can instead of settling for three and whatnot. And like the value of a possession, the value of getting a ball one more time than your opponent does, that is huge. And that is starting at midfield as opposed to starting at your own 20 because a dropped interception resulted instead in a punt and 30, 35 yards difference in field position that can come with all that. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number to call. I do have to share that nugget with you about the Bears, about their broadcast, and about, oh, musical themes as well. We'll do that before the top of the hour when Pete Futek joins us to talk some college football. It's Nick Schapkowski, Anthony Herron with you, 670 The Score. 750, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Schapkowski, Anthony Herron with you tonight. And finally, some good music from the other side of the glass. Mr. Brightside by The Killers coming back right there. I mentioned to you, and we will take your telephone calls at 312-644-6767. Nick Schapkowski, Anthony Herron with you tonight until 10 o'clock when Julie DeCaro will be here this evening. I did mention to you that there was something with the Bears broadcasters yesterday that I had a little bit of a beef with. Yeah, what's your beef? And it didn't have to do with the actual broadcast of the game. Okay. But if you were listening an hour or so ago on these very airwaves, Bears All Access is on once a week for an hour. And it's always Tom Thayer is joined by Jeff Joniak, leads the program, and Jim Miller. Obviously, Tom and Jeff do the radio broadcast. Jim Miller, part of the TV broadcast during the preseason. Adam Amin doing play-by-play for that this season.
And doing it quite well, I'd
and
say.
Doing it very well. Yes, it doesn't. You don't really miss Sam Rosen a whole hell of a lot, do you?
No,
misidentifying players
like Sam,
and teams and cities and God knows what else.
Sam's lost his fastball.
Oh, all his fastball's been gone for quite some time. I just think people have failed to pass that message along to old Sam. But they were telling a story. Jeff Joniak was, in fact, tonight telling a story of after the game last night, going back to the team hotel, and there was the bar restaurant downstairs at the hotel last night that they were sharing beverages over. Jim Miller was with them, Adam Amin, Jeff Joniak, I don't know who else. But Jeff told the story, some of the TV side, that there was a bartender asking, "What's that movie that this song is from?" And the guys listened. "I don't know. I don't know." And people didn't know. And the tune was, "Show Me the Way to Go Home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed."
And they didn't know which movie
they didn't
that
know.
Was
so
in.
You know.
Yeah, it's from Jaws.
Mike, did you know that?
No, I did not.
Get out of here.
I've seen the
Stop
movie,
running
but
my board. Herb, get your ass on the board. Send Mike home to like podcast,
I mean,
or do something
I've seen
else.
Jaws once, but I didn't know that song either.
You didn't know it? I'm going to run my own board and operate myself, scream
my
own
phone
calls all night.
You watched Jaws like 100 times. I've
watched
it
once. Well, if you find the only movie worth watching, then you continue to watch it because it's on AMC all the time. But I could not believe.
I haven't been as exposed to your Jaws obsession. I've seen you tweet about it, and I've heard it kind of come up on the afternoon show.
Uh-huh.
This has been a lifelong thing with you?
I think I first watched Jaws when I was in second or third grade, maybe the summer in between.
You guys have been going steady ever since.
And, like that was a wedding that was done the first time. Yeah. Love at first sight.
Uh-huh.
That's what that was for me. And I just couldn't believe Jeff Joniak's telling that story on Bears All Access tonight. And I'm like, "Show me the way to go home. Come on." Like, all-time classic scene in any movie. And these guys are sitting at the bar. What song? I don't know what movie it is. Finally, I picture Jim Miller looking at the guys next to him and saying, damn it, fellas. You don't know what movie this is from? You really don't know? Like Jim Miller, I picture him breaking it down like he breaks down X's and O's.
Right.
Looking at Jeff, looking at him, looking
using
who else
terms
is around.
A lot of the viewers don't understand.
And I see him just like throwing his hands up in fury like he used to over a Jay Cutler interception and being like, you got to know this. You got to know who sings this
it's
song.
The only
or what,
place
what
I've
movie
heard
is
the
from.
Song. It's not like they're playing this on the radio. It's the only place you're going to hear it is Jaws.
Still, like if you've seen it once, I thought that was a song that just stuck with you and spoke
it
to you.
Certainly sticks out with me and speaks to me.
I've
never heard it
I'm
anywhere
glad.
Else.
I'm glad.
Maybe there's something about the way the brain is wired, because my wife points this out to me a lot, where for me, because I don't really listen to music driving around or just sitting around in different places. A lot of my music tends to come if I'm either in a stadium somewhere or if I've just heard something in a movie I've been watching.
So you're familiar with like a lot of Fall Out Boy then? Like if you're the stadium jams are what get you?
If Fall Out Boy plays in the stadium a lot, then yes.
That's
I'm
like
very
the go-to band for stadium anthems any day. Pat in Westchester. Next up on the score, before you get to the point that you wanted to make when you called, did you know what movie that song was from?
Yes, Jaws.
You're damn right
okay.
you did, Pat.
All right, good.
You got common
Jaws,
sense.
Yeah.
What's
I
on your mind tonight, Pat?
I've watched that movie 100 times, yeah. I like to talk about Peanut Tillman. Is there any chance maybe the Bears could hire him as a coach to teach these guys to use their punch the football loose? He had that technique down when he was with the Bears. Maybe they could use him and his technique to help teach these guys how to get turnovers and, you know, and punch with his hand and then make a tackle with the other hand. That's what he was known for, Peanut Tillman. You think, is there any chance of that or not really?
There's a version of that I think could make sense. I don't know if Peanut is interested at this point in his life as being maybe a full-time coach, Pat, but I do think, you know, you see it a lot around the league where some of the former great players with certain teams will come in as a consultant or even, you know, sometimes it'll be viewed as an internship in certain ways. Well, they work with teams during training camp, and a lot of times, you know, like a Kevin Green before he became a full-time coach, he would go to training camp and just work with the Steelers for a few weeks here, a few weeks there, and work with the pass rushers, those outside linebackers, and just make sure guys understood the techniques and the foot placement and the hand usage and some of those types of things. So I would see if that was going to happen with Peanut, the most likely opportunity would be to bring him in during a training camp if he was going to spend a week or two in Bourbonnais with them and just, hey, Peanut, work with the DBs on that punch you used to be so great at.
Like, he was so good at it, legendarily great at it, forcing fumbles, creating turnovers. Wouldn't you think if it was that teachable of a thing or if he was that good at teaching it that more teammates would have caught on? Because it wasn't like there were other guys that knew how to get the ball out there. Like one of the famous plays in Urlacher's montage when he went into the Hall of Fame last week was every montage you saw him force the fumble against Arizona. That wasn't a Peanut punch. That was just a wildebeest of a man ripping the ball out of Edgerton James's hands and Peanut Tillman picking it up and running it in for a touchdown from 40 yards out or whatever it was. It's like if it was a very teachable thing or he was good at teaching it, wouldn't you think more people in his playing days from his teammates would have caught on a bit to that?
I mean, possibly, but you think back then, you know, he was a teammate, he wasn't a coach, and I'm sure there were
they were all in it together and like the stories and them being like the teams of teams of like in terms of getting along, like looking out for the betterment of the whole, like wouldn't that have passed along a bit?
What can end up being a learned skill, because that was obviously something that he has such a great feel for, and you see it the more you watch sports, and especially with a sport like football, where there are guys who have a knack for being around the ball. Like, you know, I'll use a sort of a broader example of a guy like Ryan Nall, who had a long, I think it was like a 69-yard run he broke last night. I don't know what Ryan Nall's 40 is, but for me, being a Pac-12 network analyst, I called a lot of his games when he was at Oregon State over the years. Didn't surprise me one bit that Ryan Nall broke a long run, not because he's fast, but because he's a guy who does have a knack, even though he's a bigger, burlier, more physical type of runner. All throughout his career, he would just, once he had a certain number of carries in a game, he would find a way to get that angle. And certain guys as running backs have a way to know the proper angle they need to run to turn the corner. Eventually, somebody's probably going to run him down. But certain guys have a feel for certain things. Like, that's not going to be the last long run that Ryan Nall has this preseason. He's going to keep getting carries. He's going to break some more runs. And then by the end of the preseason, everybody's going to be like, oh, should Ryan Nall be the third running back? Maybe he should, maybe he shouldn't. But he's gonna make some plays with the ball in his hands. Peanut Tillman, of course, had a feel for how do you take the ball away? How do you punch it out? And in a manner that so few people ever did. Because normally, like the example you gave from the Brian Urlacher montage, it's someone else. And the way it's always been taught for generations is once one of your teammates has the ball carrier corralled, then you come in as the second guy or the third guy and try to rake it away or try to punch it out. Peanut would be the primary tackler or not even tackle the guy before his shoulders or helmet, face mask, anything makes contact. He just, boom, he can just punch it out. And that was just this odd knack that he had. He had a feel for it. So to your point, that would be a difficult thing to teach it as well as he did. But to try and talk guys through what are you looking for in the opponent when the ball is exposed in a certain way, just to be more aware of it. There are things about the awareness of it, just to put it on people's minds in a certain way that you can teach, but there's not going to be anybody. It's going to be rare for somebody to do it as well as Peanut did.
Yeah, and I can't be the only person that watching last night, Ryan Nall gave me immediate flashbacks thinking to Khalil Bell, who used to do that for the Bears. Not necessarily a fleet of foot guy, but he would find long runs along the way. We have to pause for a timeout. Nick Schepkowski, Anthony Herron with you. Happenings in the Big Ten, both on and off the field. We'll talk some college football with Pete Futek next on 670 The Score.